You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 225 of the Shared Security Show. And joining me this week is my lone co-host, Florida man, Kevin Johnson.
I feel like I need an alligator to throw at somebody. And
do you have an alligator?
I do not have an alligator, but there are alligators within reach. I may have to.
Oh. That's a little frightening, like, actually, not, within reach.
Not like within reach where I could just reach over. I guess that's the wrong word. There are alligators conveniently located if I ever find need to alligator.
Fair enough. Yeah. That makes sense. Unfortunately, we are not joined by our Canadian co-host, Mr. Scott Wright. He's having some audio and difficulties, but it is just us today. But
yes.
I did want to make an announcement real quick before we get started. So I was able to obtain a free ticket for a conference called Circle City Con. I think you've heard of that conference, Kevin.
I believe I've spoken.
Probably presented there, right? Yeah, it's in Indianapolis, Indiana. This year it is July 1st through July 3rd. So it's through Friday through Sunday in July. And so I'm just throwing it out there that if there is any of our listeners that are new to security, just getting involved, maybe you've never been to a conference before, and this is close to you where you live here in the United States, I want to offer you this ticket. So to get that, just send us a message on Twitter or send us an email, and we'll kind of sort through requests if we get more than one, and hopefully we can announce a winner of getting someone a free ticket to Circle City Con.
It's a good con. I know I've been. I don't remember if I've spoken. I think I have. I think you and I spoke there together.
Nope, I've never been there, actually.
No?
Okay, it's on my list to go, but I've heard nothing but great things.
We're talking about it.
Yeah.
I might be completely wrong.
Maybe you are.
It's well, in Indianapolis.
Yes, correct.
I've never been to Circle City Con.
Okay. maybe you should go.
Maybe I should.
Maybe I need to give you the ticket, Kevin.
No. Don't give me the ticket. I'm not a good conference attendee. I'm just not good at it.
You're a good conference speaker. I will tell you that.
I appreciate that. Yes. I don't like the way I present, but other people seem to. Yeah. They keep asking me back. So
let's get into the news this week. And we want to start with some news about the FBI that has been searching the data of millions of Americans without warrants. And I do want to say that this really hasn't been on the news, which is a little surprising, given that in this report from Bloomberg, they had said that as many as 3.4 million U.S. residents have had their information searched without a warrant. So, I mean, this isn't, I'm not surprised to hear this. I'm sure you're not either, Kevin, but this is kind of another just, you know, when we talk about surveillance and warrantless surveillance, this is still an ongoing issue.
This is where you start to hear the idiots saying things like, well, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, you shouldn't worry about it. Or well, we have to protect our borders and our, you know, national security. And, you know, they used FISA, F-I-S-A, or however you say that, right? You know, saying, okay, well, you know, national security, foreign intelligence, when years ago, when it first came out that the government, you know, various agencies were listening on calls from foreign countries into, you know, the U.S. and, but it's okay, don't worry about it. We're only listening to the foreign side, right? Or whatever, yes. Right? It's an abuse of power, And don't get me wrong. I like the idea of stopping terrorism. I like the idea of not letting bad things happen. But I believe very firmly that the people in power are more likely to abuse that power than to do good with that power. I mean, I just flew out to San Diego and back and got to see, you know, TSA in action again.
Security theater.
Yeah. Thousands standing around. I know that we've stopped things. I know that the government has said, okay, well, we caught this thing before it was bad and we saved lives. That's great. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you right now, and I don't care what side of politics you're on, you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Communist, Vegetarian, CrossFitter. The reality is the government is not doing good for all of us for the most part. We can talk about Florida if you want to talk about Florida. We can talk about the idiots that have been in the White House. And you can decide who I mean, because there's multiple of them. And
we're not biased here. Yes.
Right. I am. I'm very biased.
Well, you are.
I have no problem admitting it. The lack of transparency is what bothers me, right? I believe the government has good things to do. I believe that the government is we aren't anarchists. We're not saying that we shouldn't have government at all. But the lack of transparency, the lack of, hot button topic right now, the number of people in government who are mad about the leak from the Supreme Court, instead of discussing and talking about what the leak leaked, right? The same thing here. The number of government people who are like, well, yeah, but the FBI is here to protect us. Yeah, no, they're not. They're here to enforce laws. It's been proven time and time again that police officers, nothing against police officers, but they're not here to protect us. They're not here to serve us. The whole protect and serve thing is bullshit. The courts have upheld multiple times. They are here to enforce the law. And when they are here to enforce the law, yet are breaking the law regularly to do their job, we have an issue. And that needs to be addressed. And the way to address it isn't to fire the 6 FBI agents that acknowledge that they did it. It's to change the leadership, to change the way. And bluntly, that's in your hands and my hands, because we're voting for morons and allowing them to do this stuff. So, yeah, it pisses me off that we're doing this. I don't agree with the ACLU all the time, but I damn straight agree with them on this one.
Yeah, I same here as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's not much that we as citizens can really do about it. I know they say write your congressperson, vote, I mean, all those things. But, you know, time and time again, we see, unfortunately, those actions don't really amount to much in terms of surveillance. I'm talking about,
I would argue, they don't amount to anything, because the minute the senator can stand up and do their sound bite, that's the most important thing for their next election, where they say we're protecting you, idiots decide, yeah, Oh, they're protecting me, we should vote for them.
Yes, we all need to get over the fact that politicians are not here for our own good. They're here for their own agenda. And yeah,
I'm not an originalist, but I totally agree with the idea that we did not want a political career. Politics was supposed to be something you stopped your normal career to do and then go back to what you did. Yep. And I saw something today and it was bad. It said that, you know, it is generally assumed that people who are 70 to 80 years old are unemployable because of mental decline and things like that. And I don't know that I agree with that. I agree with the statement that most companies won't employ people 70 to 80, right? Yet most of our representatives fall well within that age group.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Bite me. So, like, this is something that every congressperson, every House representative, every senator, every governor, every president should be screaming about how bad this is. Yet they're not.
So imagine this scenario. You're out of the office unexpectedly, and a colleague pings you because they need access to some system you have credentials for. Now, our listeners would never send passwords over email or Slack, right? But what about your coworkers? How many organizations out there are sending logins back and forth in plain text? Worse yet, how many just store all of their logins on a shared spreadsheet? We all know that human errors are the biggest threat to your organization's security. But did you know that weak or stolen passwords account for over 80% of all data breaches? Now, there are tools out there that can allow you to share credentials, set access permissions, and monitor the dark web for stolen logins. And Keeper Security's Enterprise Password Management Platform does just that. Keeper locks down logins, payment cards, confidential documents, API keys, and database passwords in a patented zero-knowledge encrypted vault. And it takes less than an hour to deploy across your organization. Sign up for a Keeper free trial for your organization today and get a free 3-year personal plan. Stop sharing emails and spreadsheets with the keys to the kingdom. Get started by visiting keepersecurity.com/sharedsecurity.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. Go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
So let's move away from politics, maybe.
Yes.
And let's talk about, actually, I think this is some exciting news that came out about the move towards passwordless sign-on. Yes. So Apple, Google, and Microsoft have now committed to extend support for this new standard that has this standard has been, just to say, it's been worked on for quite a while. So FIDO Alliance and the Worldwide Web Consortium, these two groups have gotten together over the years and they're working on standards. In fact, I did a podcast back in 2020 with Andrew Shikiar, who is the head of the FIDO Alliance. And he had talked about what, you know, this standard and what this means. And the FIDO Alliance has really been involved more in enterprise standards, but more recently they've been pushing this towards consumers. And now having Apple, Google, and Microsoft, I mean, the three big ones, right, commit to this is a pretty big deal. So essentially what this is, passwords are not going away anytime soon, right? I look at this as like one small step in that direction. And this will essentially allow your phone to be used as essentially that login device through, say, a PIN or a biometric, you know, a fingerprint or your face scan to log you into websites, right? Using something called a passkey. And I think we talked about passkeys maybe on this show before.
Yeah.
But the key to this working is, and I think this is the key takeaway, is that websites have to support this standard in order to allow you to essentially log in with your phone one time. That gives you access to the sites that have enabled this standard. At least that's how I read this.
Yep. Yeah. I think this is interesting. I'm happy to see this coming. I've been happy since they started talking about it. I think the important thing to remember is this is only going to work for a subset of people.
Yeah.
Because of the technical requirements. And it will only work well if the password actually goes away. And here's what I mean by that. I've been using the passwordless authentication with Microsoft for a while. And when I go to log in, my phone has, right, I absolutely have used it. But I'll tell you right now that if for some reason I can't, my Microsoft account has a password associated with it. There is still a password in the underlying system. That password is still accessible to log in a person. And I'm not, this is not me making fun of Microsoft and saying, look, they failed. I get that, but the reality is right now, as we are in 2022, even these passwordless systems have passwords still, right?
That's right.
And they're going to have that backup for a while. And the reason they're going to have that backup for a while is because of the lack of support widespread. And so I think here, the thing we need to keep in mind is we need to not complain to Microsoft. We need to complain to every time you go log into a website and the website requires you to create a unique local account for that website. Think about whether you really want to use the site.
Yeah.
Right. It makes me even madder when I go to a site that supports a Microsoft login or a Google login or whatever. And then after I do that, it says, okay, please now create a local account. No, that you just
don't do that.
Why did you partially support this single sign-on system? Right. I those are the sites. And bluntly, I reach out to the owner of the website. I reach out to the support and say, hey, why am I doing this? Why have you implemented this wrong? I get it. They're bolting on single sign-on systems to legacy systems. Fix it. If you want my money in my business, fix it.
Yeah. I think the other concern that I've seen in some articles is, you know, well, what happens if you lose your phone, right? Because now we're under the assumption that, first of all, well, everybody has a phone or has some type of device that allows this, you can almost say a two-factor, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of the basis of this. And there is solutions, right? This is, well, your pass key and all that will be uploaded to the cloud and then it'll be restored to your device when you get a new device if you lost your phone. So I think they are obviously thinking of that. But I remember you had the conversation a couple of podcasts ago where you talked about, we talked about the move. A lot of young people now are ditching their smartphones and going to a flip phone, right?
Yeah.
Because it's now cool. But what about that, right? Do you have to have some other device now to log you into to all these websites if there is a more move towards this? It's interesting.
I've said this for years talking to people about SMS two-factor being horrible. And I've always pointed out, right, we still have 10 to 20% of the population that don't have smartphones.
Yeah.
And the only thing they're going to be able to use, forget, you know, and everything I'm reading says that that number is going up, not down, right? We're becoming more privacy concerned and everything else like that. So we're finally moving in a direction where we're going to fix stuff, yet we're going to ruin it because we don't have the devices that support it.
I think there was just recently, didn't the White House announce this new initiative to have free internet access or something for like different areas of the country?
So I've read a few headlines about it. I've not read any articles, but yeah, they even if it's not free internet access, they are pushing really hard on broadband access, high speed access. And I want to be blunt. Part of the issue here is the government. They had a requirement for broadband access, and then they lowered what the speed required to be considered broadband to let these companies get away with saying they met the requirement. So the government is now going back and enforcing the thing they said originally, is my understanding. Internet's required nowadays.
That's what I mean, the reason I said that was because there's a lot of people in this country that don't have internet access, but may just have a flip phone. You know, it's we have to think of those people as well when we're thinking about a massive change in authentication across the whole internet. It's kind of interesting. So let's go to our last story, which is thousands of popular websites see what you type before you hit submit. Fascinating, isn't it, Kevin?
We haven't talked about this for years at all.
What is this JavaScript thing you talk about?
It must be some of the newfangled web tech. It's probably Web 4.0.
This is Web 4.0. technology completely.
Yeah. You got me on this. Basically, my understanding of this from reading the story and from reading the paper, they tested about 100,000 websites and found where many of them used, and I like how they said, effective keyloggers. They're not an effective keylogger. They are a keylogger.
That's what it is.
Code that captures keystrokes yep. and sends them to the website.
Mm-hmm.
That's a keylogger. It's not yep. a bad keylogger necessarily, but that's the definition of a keylogger. Look, this is one of those cases, right? We have pushed companies to give us a more responsive interface. One of the ways they give us a more responsive interface is by dumping JavaScript down that reads things and tries to make decisions beforehand. It's the same. It's the search autocomplete, right? As you start typing search, it sends keystrokes back to the API or the website to say, okay, they've searched for PE. Now they've searched for PET. Now they've searched for PETF. Yeah. I bet you they mean pet store. And I'm building a fish tank, so that's in my mind. And I'm not building a fish tank. I bought the tank, but it's one of those things where that's normal behavior nowadays for a website. Not disagreeing with the results of this study where they said, look, it's taking email addresses that you hadn't submitted. I don't know if this is right, but in my head, if I type my email address in a form, I'm not going to do that accidentally.
No, you're intending to do it.
Right. So even though I haven't hit the submit button yet, I feel like I've given my email address to that website. So I think this is less of a concern than it's being presented as. But I do think it absolutely is a privacy issue, right? Especially if you allow your browser to just automatically fill stuff, right? Like that. In those cases, yes, it's worse.
It reminds me of, have you ever gone to some online store and you put stuff in your checkout, your cart, but then you just went and did something else. And then you get an email reminder saying, hey, you forgot to check out. Here's the things that you put in your cart and we'll give you a 10% discount if you check out. And like, it's kind of along those same lines, right? Where you intended to maybe buy something and you just haven't gone through the whole process of hitting the button or the payment button or what have you. And it is a little bit of, it's a little creepy because obviously they know that, we know it's in your cart. They know you went, they probably know your browser. They probably know your IP address. They know all these things about you, which is, besides this research, right? We're still talking about tracking cookies and those types of things. But yeah, it may be surprising to people to think that every little keystroke you're typing in a form, that information is going to a server, essentially.
I can totally see it being surprising to people. I don't think it should be. We've talked about this for years. And not just you and I, lots of people have talked about this for years, right? Heck, I think Jeremiah Grossman was one of the first people I ever heard speak about this issue with JavaScript.
Yeah.
And
it's going to be these things are going to continue to happen. It's just the nature of how the web is being used.
The question is, what do you want your websites to be able to do?
Yeah.
Do you want them responsive and working and doing all this kind of stuff? In which case, they can be abused. Or do you want them to go back to the animated GIFs that sell you it's under construction with, gray background, black text, blue links?
I kind of miss those days, Kevin, to be honest. I mean, we talked about GeoCities. I had a GeoCity site. You had an Angel Fire site, I believe.
I had both.
You said.
I used to play around with lots of that stuff. I don't miss those days. And the reason I don't miss the days is I kind of like what we're able to do nowadays.
Oh, it's amazing. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, let's be blunt. I want to build a fish tank with my daughter and I know nothing about building fish tanks. So I go on the website and I learn this stuff and I order some fish and it makes some recommendations. And like, hey, you might need this too. And I go, man, I do. You're right. And that kind of stuff's awesome. I like that. I like being able to use web interfaces like this that record us and let us interact and talk. The world's a better place overall.
No doubts. No doubts.
It's just scarier.
That's right. And that's what I miss, the non-scary times. That's all.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
Well, with that, I think that's all we had time for this week. So hopefully next week we'll get Scott back and up and running. Speaking of technology, hopefully he doesn't have any more technology problems. But thank you, Kevin, as always, for joining us. And we'll talk to everyone again next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.